Right, the time is 4 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you, to all the Eagle FM listeners, and no matter where you are or to the in from, thank you so much, and we really, really appreciate your support. And today is Thursday, the 17th of April, 2025, and of course, welcome to the Early Morning Scoop, a program whereby we dive into the latest updates on the economy, entrepreneurship, and of course policy updates. And of course, I'm your host as usual, Lisa Shimi, and I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30. But before we get into the international segment, please don't forget to rather connect with us on our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village News web page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for daily news and of course newspaper alerts, and do download Eagle FM app available on Google Play and the App Store, and just to stay also updated wherever you go around the world, you can able to tune in on the app via the app, that's Eagle FM app. Of course, do not also forget to download the Imba app. You'll find that on your Google Play Store and of course your app store. And to start off internationally, is that the Zimbabwean manufacturer exporters are appealing to the government to ease the cost of doing businesses, warning that higher operational expenses driven by taxes, licenses, and regulatory handlings are limiting their productivity. And of course, many firms report operating at just 50% of capacity, and they are calling for targeted interventions to revive the country's struggling industrial sector. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Manufacturing sector survey showed industrial capacity utilization was 52.3% in 2024, meaning that almost half of capacity is lying idle. The statistics have been declining since 2021, when they peaked at 56%, sparking concerns that growth in the sector has plateaued.
If nothing is done, the manufacturing sector has actually reached what they can do. Probably this is the best that the sector can do, given the operating environment that we have. The only way to increase capacity utilization is for something to change.
Specifically, policies that lower taxes.
One of the biggest challenges is the high cost of doing business, and the difficulty of operating, which comes into high taxes and other things, which the government has also acknowledged.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa has directed the government to reduce or eliminate some regulatory fees imposed on businesses by June. The reprieve will help local manufacturers compete with cheaper goods in foreign markets. Currently, only 5% of manufactured products here are exported.
Manufacturers are concerned that the lack of competitiveness could undermine the benefits from the African Consolidated Free Trade Area.
However, the fears have been downplayed by some trade experts who believe the global turmoil caused by United States tariffs will give impetus to intra-African trade.
Tariffs, by its very nature, seeks to restrict trade. It seeks to create an imbalance of power, and that's exactly what we're seeing playing out now. The AFCFTA seeks to break down those barriers. You know, from a tariff perspective, we know that if we are able to properly implement and exploit the African trade bloc, we will have a situation of easy mobility. That's from a product and services side of things. We will have potentially lower to no import duties, making our goods far more accessible in the continent.
The annual manufacturing survey found that the economy remains heavily dollarized, with most companies generating their own foreign currency through sales, with just 8% accessing US dollars through the official banking channels and 3% from the parallel market.
All right. Moving on to the next item is that the consumers have continued to show resilience amidst the challenges economic times. Now, the stats of South Africa data shows retail trade sales increased by 3.9% year-on-year in February, and this represents a slowdown compared to the January leading of 7%. We're going to take a listen to this particular update.
Economic Times, Stats SA data shows retail trade sales increased by 3.9% year-on-year in February. This represents a slowdown compared to January reading of 7%. The largest positive contributors to the annual increase were retailers in textiles, clothing and footwear, as well as general dealers. On a month-on-month basis, retail trade sales decreased by 1.3% in February compared with January, and they say the positivity recorded in the annual readings can be attributed to improved consumer sentiment, supported by better household finances as a result of increases in wages and the low inflation environment. The lower interest rates and withdrawals from the two-pot retirement system have also gone a long way in boosting household finances.
The trade war between the two really big economies, China and the U.S., and as well as the tariffs that have been imposed on South Africa by the U.S. president. And so these are really big dynamics that are going to come into play and are going to change the behavioral economics of consumers. And that's, you know, added to the issue of the non-adjustment on their income of around 5.5%, that of course is going to cause a budget creep, meaning that consumers, and as much as they are going to, you know, with the illusion be that they're going to be earning more, they're going to be pushed up into higher tax brackets, and that's going to cause them to actually take very little disposable income as compared to what they were earning before. And of course, coupled that with the VAT increase that comes into effect on the 1st of May, we're going to see a lot of consumers having to start being extremely strategic about which kinds of, you know, disposable goods do they need to get, and which goods are become part of the necessity basket, as most of their disposable income will really be, and I think severely, reduced when it comes to inflation. And as you know, with trade wars, we understand that there's going to be a lot of inflationary pressure that's going to come in as a contingent effect of what is going on in the U.S. as well as in China.
All right, there you have it. The time is 12 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We are on the international segment. Now, moving on to the next item is that with the United States representing a comparatively a smaller share, as some analysts suggest, African economies might be less exposed to the policy uncertainties stemming from a shift in U.S. foreign and trade policy. Now, economists on this, we might take a listen to what they have
Back to the African continent. Trade ministers from around Africa are meeting in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, to discuss the Trump administration's controversial tariff policies. Now, earlier this month, Washington imposed a new 10% baseline tariff, they called it, on imports from virtually all African countries. But some states, like Lesotho, were hit by a much higher rate, 50%, in the case of that landlocked southern African country. Now, a 90-day pause was announced some hours later, but the original decree to begin with was enough to concern many in African government, especially those that have become reliant on AGOA. That's the African Growth and Opportunity Act. For two decades, that law has provided duty-free access for exporters to the United States market. Organizers say that this Kinshasa meeting is looking to strategize now to mitigate the effects of these tariffs once that 90-day break is over. The Secretary General of the African Continental Free Trade Area, Wamkele Mene, has described the tariffs as a wake-up call for the continent. He's now urging African countries to accelerate their efforts towards economic self-sufficiency and more regional integration. Now, between them, the European Union, China and India, they accounted for at least half of Africa's two-way trade flows in 2023. So given the comparatively smaller share of trade with the United States, does that then imply that African economies are less vulnerable to the policy uncertainty unleashed by this White House? That's why I started my conversation with Dr. Dauda Sembene, an economist and the founder of the advisory firm AfriCatalyst.
Last year, for instance, Africa's total export were about $682 billion, and the share of export from African countries to the U.S. was about $40 billion. So basically, you're talking about less than 6%. If you look at it that way, it may not be very significant. But if you look at it from a country perspective, from those countries that sort of export quite a sizable volume of goods to the U.S., then that is very much significant. And for those countries, I guess any tariff change or the new U.S. Trade policy might really very much have very damaging impact on their ability to remain competitive, but also to sort of stimulate their economic activities.
And we will be talking about one of those countries, South Africa, in just a moment. But I want to jump.
Go big this Easter with extra low prices at WB. Get a 1 kg Yum Yum Peanut Spread Tub for $59.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $74.99 with Smart Buy. 1.8 liter Farmhouse Ice Cream for a sweet $39.99. 1 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $33.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 Sheet 1 Ply Toilet Rolls for $34.99. See all our exciting Easter specials at FullmanBlock.com. We care.
Jump on some comments from the U.S. Trade Representative when he was speaking to Congress, and he says, you know, we're talking with the Kenyan authorities on setting up a new free trade agreement, right, between the two countries. And that seems to be a sort of template that this administration is going for, bilateral trade deals with individual African countries. But assuming that that is the case that they will go with, right, as a way of replacing AGOA, how should Kenyan policymakers be thinking about A, how to protect their own nascent manufacturing, but also B, to also not have negative spillover effects into their trade within the regional trade blocks like COMESA or the East African Community?
Well, Kenya, like 53 other African countries, have made commitment under the African Free Continental Free Trade Area to sort of work together to set up a common market. I think that came with a number of commitments in terms of how they should go about the trade relationship with other non-African countries, also how they should go about removing trade barriers within African countries, non-trade barriers within African countries. So definitely, I think it is certainly in African interest that under the African Union umbrella, Kenya and all other African countries together sort of negotiate with the U.S. to get the best deal for Africa, not for individual countries. That being said, if a country like Kenya is being invited to actually have bilateral trade agreement with the U.S., I would assume that it's very hard for them to refuse that invitation. But what would really matter is to make sure that any agreement that they would have with the U.S. continue to be in line with their commitment and their sort of the requirements of the CFTA, the African Continental Free Trade Area. I think this is extremely critical to make sure that whatever country actually sort of agree with the U.S. on a bilateral basis, not just the U.S., but with any other non-African countries, whatever they agree on a bilateral basis is very much something that is fully in line with their commitment under the Free Trade Area of Africa. I think that would be critical.
Just pulling back from a global perspective, given all the turmoil that we're seeing at the moment and all the trade barriers coming up, how concerned should these trade ministers be about the possibility of seeing goods being dumped into their market, especially this year?
Look, I think this is very much a legitimate concern, and I believe, as I said earlier, it is quite urgent at this stage that under the umbrella of the African Union, trade ministers throughout Africa sort of convene as soon as possible, first of all, to very much understand the impact of the current situation, starting with the U.S. tariffs, but also the current geopolitical context, to see how that might impact the Africa as a whole and their country. Individually, and then sort of agree and strategize about how best to collectively respond to this new deal and this new reality.
Let's focus on one of the countries that's likely to be hard hit by these specific round of tariffs. South Africa had a near $9 billion trade deficit with the United States, and they export a broad range of things, right? So it's wine from those lovely vineyards down in Cape Town, it's vehicles from Port Elizabeth, it's chrome, it's iron ore, it's aluminium and steel, and so on and so forth into the U.S. So assuming for the sake of argument, AGOA is basically dead, and these tariffs do get reimposed again at that rate of 30-something percent 90 days from now, how does that affect the competitiveness of South African exports?
Well, I mean, South Africa is one of those African countries that have a huge exposure to the U.S. market. It is one of those countries where the size of the export to the U.S. compared to the total imports is quite significant. And when I say significant, I'm talking about cases where it might be more than 5%. So I think if...
All right, and there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the African Trade Ministers are meeting in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, have agreed to fast-track policies that will promote trade within the continent in order to reduce their resilience on foreign market. Now, we might take a listen to that specific update, whereas the move comes a few weeks after the United States imposed a 10% tariff on imports from African countries. We might take a listen to this.
Trade ministers from across the African continent converged on the DRC capital, Kinshasa, for the 16th Council of Trade Ministers of the African Continental Free Trade Area. The free trade bloc seeks to create a single market for goods and services across Africa. Economists, policymakers, and the DRC president, Felix Tshisekedi, attended the event and called for the implementation of policies that promote trade in the continent. Their meeting comes a few weeks after the U.S. imposed a 10% tariff on imports from African countries.
One of the challenges that remains ahead of us, which we have to confront with the support of our heads of states, the assembly of the heads of states and government on the African Union, is the current global context. The current challenging global context, where we see fragmentation of geopolitical and geoeconomic environments, where we see economic nationalism, investment nationalism, and weaponization of trade policy for the benefit of just that one member of the global community.
The tariffs introduced by U.S. President Donald Trump will increase operating costs for African exporters, many of whom have been relying on preferential trade agreements like the African Growth and Opportunity Act to access U.S. markets. African leaders are now seeking to strengthen their partnerships and reduce trade barriers to address the challenge, but they face logistical and political challenges to realize their goal. Chris Ochamoga, SABC News.
All right. Now the time is 22 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the African nations are grappling with a convergence of internal and external crisis, with debt service payment emerging as a key constraint. Now, the African Development Bank reports that in 2023 alone, countries across the continent spend more than $160 billion on the debt, serving more than 2.5 times the figure from 2010. We might take a listen to this update.
Officer Adjoa Feek. With 4 weeks to go to the Africa CEO Forum, that's the largest gathering of the government and the private sector in Africa pretty much every year, we explore the top three ideas to be discussed in detail in mid-May.
First, we have a clear change in terms of protectionism. Trade is becoming more transactional, if not to say more confrontational. So that's a very clear trend. Number one, Trump is an everyday illustration of that. The second challenge is the reduced amount of liquidity for Africa, because capital is flying to safety. You have development aid, which is drying up, and you have another also looming threat, is the fight against immigration in many countries that is also threatening remittances. This is happening at a time where debt to GDP are at all-time high in on the continent, and where our countries have little resources and little room to maneuver.
I'm glad you brought up the question around capital, because one of the things that, you know, in especially post-pandemic, one of the things I keep hearing every time I attend these conferences is heads of state, heads of government, finance ministers, they keep saying, look, we think we're being unfairly rated by ratings agencies, mostly from the West, Moody's, Fitch, S&P, and so on and so forth. And you've organized a debate on the first day of the event. addressing that very question, could you walk us through some of the feedback that you often get from heads of state and government and why they think they're being unfairly rated? Because, as, you know, to your point, there's a couple of African sovereigns that have come to the market this year, Kenya, Cote d'Ivoire. They've ended up borrowing money at relatively expensive rates, over 9% on the US dollar, which is pretty pricey.
That's true, but that's definitely an issue of sovereignty, like all the rest of the issue that we're going to talk about during the CEO forum. That's clear that the current financial situation is a hindrance for Africa's development and the capacity of governments to go into international markets and borrow at a reasonable rate. And I think there's a lot of progress that we can make towards that target, but also, we should be balanced on that idea, because I was reading the other day the Argentina has gone through 23 IMF bailout, and I've been looking at the coupon that they've been paying on the euro bonds or dollar denominated bonds, and they're basically between 8 to 10% interest rates. We also can't deny that we have governments that made default. Kenya made default. Ghana made default. Remember, the president of Ghana made a very viral speech on TV saying that Ghana should be self-sufficient in terms of financing, just to go 2 or 3 years later through an IMF bailout. So we cannot deny our debt-to-level GDP. We cannot deny our default. So, and that's why some of the finance ministers have been, you know, this issue has been really polarizing between the finance ministers. A lot of them have been saying, okay, we need to also show that we can honor our commitments, and we need to show that we have success stories. We need to show that we are a reliable financing partner. So at the same time, we need to work on how to get better financing condition, and we have also local markets to go through this.
Indeed, and that's, you know, turning onto local sources on the continent, because so far I think what usually has happened is countries will borrow within their own domestic markets, and yet there are these pools of capital right across the continent that other countries simply are not tapping into. Say, for example, you're in Togo, Cote d'Ivoire, you want to raise cash for a housing project, or you want to build a toll road, you tap into pension funds, for example, in South Africa, you know, hypothetically. Might we see conversations around that, you know, tapping into continental pools of capital rather than just sticking to either foreign capital in the West or just our tiny little domestic markets?
Oh, that's definitely one of the most important conversation that needs to happen at the CEO forum, because we're talking a lot about sovereignty, and this is conversation is happening at a moment when most of the international banks have retreated from Africa. And so now we have a clear mandate to grow our financial institutions from on one point, to make our banks or insurance real continental powerhouses, so that they have the means to be a financing partner. And we definitely need to work on a common market of financial services, and trying to make investment from one country, from one region to the other, very easy, so that our institutional investors, whether it's pension funds, insurance company, have ways to deploy their liquidity. That's a clear answer to all the financing challenges. All the governments have identified that issue.
All right. There you have it. Just lastly, on the international segment, is that the traffic officials are expected to be on higher alerts, or as thousands of Madrids move to different areas to celebrate the Easter. Their Easter. Now the country has been having higher fatalities during the Easter season for years, with 335 people losing their lives last year. We might take a listen to this particular update from the South Africa.
Were recorded on the same weekend last year. That's compared to 236 in 2023. So we're asking you tonight, how do we reduce road accidents during the Easter weekend? What is it that will make you feel safer on the road? So get in touch with us by sending us a WhatsApp on 072 110 5584, or give us a call, 0105946010. Joining us for this discussion is KwaZulu-Natal Transport MEC, Mr. Swoli Saduma. We're also joined by the Limpopo Transport MEC, Susani Violet Matye. We'll chat as well to PATCO spokesperson, Lindokuhle Xulu. But at the moment, we are also joined by Santaco spokesperson, Ms. Rebecca Pala. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. This is such an important discussion. And of course, already on Wednesday evening, some of the traffic already picking up. Perhaps, MEC Duma, you could talk to us about just how much traffic KZN actually gets, so, you know, how you trace those numbers, and some of your biggest concerns going into this long weekend.
Let me put your good self, Nandeti, and your viewers at homes and the colleagues as well, that we are also here to engage on such a critical debate. From tomorrow, we're expecting almost 1,200 an hour or per hour in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. As you know, in particular, as you enter from Van Rinan in particular, that's where you measure. So our data is based on that. It's cumulative in nature. On Friday, it becomes more.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwigs at 91.2.
Then on Sunday and Monday more, because others are going back to other provinces like Gauteng, like Mpumalanga, like Free State. So it has already started increasing, because yesterday and on Saturday we had a big launch where even Free State was present, and Mpumalanga and RTMC from National.
Yeah, and talk to me about that big launch. So how it is that the province then prepares for these high numbers, and some of the trends that you have picked up over the years about how we do see fatalities on the roads as traffic moves towards KZN.
We've seen an artillery of joint operation where SAPS will be involved, Custom through Home Affairs will be involved, RTMC, RTI, the ambulance service. It become
right there. You have it. The time is 31 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and that was the international segment. We will take a listen to this very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take through the local update. Do not go away.
Keep preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy handbooks to the world of digital handbook versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital handbook in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various handbooks under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsie Nehangano, De Asherero Omaimburiro, The Catholics Manita Karunga, The Africans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
All right, welcome back. The time is 32 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. And if you just join us right now, thank you so much for joining us. And this is Early Morning Scoop, where as we dive into the economic segment, for the policy update, and of course, entrepreneurship and trade also. So, but then to start off, my colleague Dwight Links spoke to Yona Mushako about the opening of the Hyon Oshivere project and its expansion within the hydrogen sector. Now, he also explored how Namibia can export finished products and address some misunderstanding about the green hydrogen and its potential to improve the country's economy. We might take a listen to what they have discussed.
Joe joining us here on the Early Morning Scoop with regards to trying to understand some of the particular knock-on benefits and developments that have come from the past weekend's unveiling of the High Iron Oshivela project. We are joined here on air by the Green Hydrogen Program's Jonah Musheko to get some further understanding about the developments as well as also some of the particular conversation matter that in some cases has not ceased or gone away, and in some scenarios also that has provided the much needed evidence to the Namibian economy. Jonah, I'd like to thank you for taking the time and welcome to this morning's discussion.
Thank you for having me and good morning to the listeners.
Jonah, if we start off specifically on our conversation, the first particular our springboard is technically, if we have to look at the achievement of the High Iron Oshivela project, the question that anyone that would ask and looking into this particular discussion is, what is the achievement of the project? Not just, you know, the unveiling and obviously the construction that's taking place, but some of the other particular direct and indirect sort of like tangible, you know, achievements that the project has achieved for both the Namibian people and also Namibia's goal in industrialization.
Well, thank you so much. I think quickly and technically, the achievements we can't really bypass to mention things like they have set up about 44,000 units of solar panels on a 25 hectare of land to producing 25 megawatts of electricity that is now renewable energy that is being utilized. It's that specific plant. We should also not bypass the fact that they have managed to import the biggest electrolyzers in the Southern Africa region, two of them, totaling to 12 megawatts. Also the fact that they have put all of these components, including the film, together within the project timeline of a year. If you put all together, within 12 or 11 months, they were done with everything. So, and I think this is very important because of the development and the implementation. Something that I think if you look at overall, sometimes we have projects that are capital projects that are started and eventually they take long, but if you look at this project itself, you know it's not a government project. You see that it has been implemented within the time frame and also within the, you know, availed funds by that time. It's a success at the technical level. It is national level and also in terms of how that provision Namibia is to say, not just a basic plan, they have a plan with also securing off-take agreements or markets to say that what they are producing there is correct market for what they are producing. I'm sure last year, December, you have read in the papers that they have gotten somebody who is willing to buy 200 1,000 metric tons of directed juice iron ore coming from there. And that obviously will be fully implemented as they put in place their phase as they start with that, all those arrangements towards the end of this year. So that is very strategic and very important to us in Namibia, and the fact that this is the first type of plant that is producing directed juice iron ore. For processing iron ore at a zero emission range where there is zero emission of carbon dioxide. Globally, these type of plants, they are very much intense in terms of emission of carbon dioxide. If you look at the numbers, I think they are talking about, they contribute to close to 8 to 9% of emission globally. And that's why they are also categorized as the, hard to abate industries. So it's very much remarkable for us Namibia, but also at an African level. And if you also look at it to say what they are doing with Iron Oshivela is a product that is going to be produced. If you look at that to actually find itself in the market like South Africa, South Africa is two places, food manufacturing and eventually car manufacturing. Initially sell that product to South Africa for car manufacturing, and eventually those cars, for instance Toyota, they can find themselves in the market, in the European market. And that's how we participate in the global market as Africans, with products that are value added and also be able to really get good prices in our raw minerals that they've added value or solve such as green hydrogen like what we are doing here in Namibia.
And Jonah, this obviously leads us on to the next question, which is and one about when can we actually expect High Iron to have the DRI ready for exporting? This is obviously related to the product that they have, that they will produce there. And can you potentially give us an update regarding the port of Rotterdam in terms of their usage and storage and facilitation in green hydrogen in the realm of green hydrogen's usage?
I think based on what the speeches that were delivered at the inauguration, you can already pick up that the factory or the plant is already ready to start with production. What the president did there, what our president did there, she started the first production of direct reduced iron ore. We have seen people that were there, have seen since it was broadcasted. The plant is ready to start production. They will be producing 15,000 metric tons of direct reduced iron ore, and that eventually will be ready for market. So it's not a thing of saying inauguration happened and then the production starts after 2-3 months. No, inauguration happened and then production starts as soon as that. So the product is already coming out of there. It's just a matter of them getting the enough production file that they can eventually start to export. Different markets, depending on who has shown interest and also respecting their offtake agreement. And now, quickly, just in terms of looking at the Port of Rotterdam, we are working with the Port of Rotterdam in terms of preparing Namibia in terms of our ability to export green hydrogen, green ammonia to such ports. And that is happening in conjunction with our port authority. If you look into some of, I think, for instance, the expansion of the Walvis Bay port, Namport, they've got an element of, bunkering or, storage of clean ammonia. And that is the purpose to say it will be able to be exported to places like the Port of Lebanon. And that is the cooperation we have. The relationship we have with such facilities globally, their engagement at that level of the Namport as well as Port of Rotterdam, they are working together in seeing how best they can expand that towards the northern part of the port, in accommodating an industry like this, but not only green hydrogen, but also accommodating the industry such as oil and gas. So that's basically what I can say in terms of Port of Rotterdam, as much as our export expansions are concerned. But I think it would always be good to get the right and accurate context from our port authority, maybe a CEO, so that I can give more details on how far they are, what are the plans in place, and things like that.
Exactly. Jonah, if we have to look at, in terms of the unveiling that the president, that's the President Mandenda, participated in over the weekend, obviously the president herself indicated that she was convinced based upon the progress that the High Iron Oshivela project had achieved so far. And if we now have to, extract from her convincing, her being convinced about this particular impact that the project will have, what do you think are some of the particular causes of misunderstanding that are still permeating in the broader Namibian public, and how can they actually be cleared up by this? Which also leads us into the next second half of that question in terms of, and has it been, and has it been about 4 years since Namibia has introduced green hydrogen? Would we say that Namibians actually understand what this new particular fuel source actually, the potential that it actually carries?
I think the first is very important to expand on the context you gave when it comes to our president, and I think she has put it very rightly for herself to say. She gave the background when these investors reached out to her when she was the Minister of International Relations, and she said that by then she had lent her ears to these investors. And it was not a new thing for her to meet with investors that want to invest in the country. She said that it is always good to meet the investors, but it's always a pleasure that these investors eventually start to invest or do whatever they promised when they met. I don't meet with her. So she has indicated that she has put these investors in a group of all other investors to say, they come here, some of them, they make it to really invest tangibly, some of them never showed up. So when she saw that, I think in 2023 or 2022, she said that they came back to her to update her that this is what we are busy doing, and they went back with a sample of the director juice or pallet. And she was very convinced that she will keep tracking again of what is that is happening in as much as this sector is concerned. And she indicated that she didn't even know herself that that would be the first project that she will inaugurate as the president, fifth president of the Republic of Namibia. But she initially said that she is very proud of all the people that were involved in terms of making that dream, you know, realized and manifest in such a way, most especially considering the time frame that the project has been implemented. Now, moving on to your second part of the question in terms of making the Namibian people understand, also to say how can we, you know, move forward in making sure that the people understand the value in this industry. First of all, we must understand that almost every new industry will need to do more work to make the people understand. It's not a new thing for people not to, you know, just buy into something quick like that. And I think initiatives such as what we are doing here and people are from already, we are having conversations, it will contribute to making people understand. So that element of public awareness, continuous discussion, platforms for people to ask questions, it is very important to make the people and the public understand, including our policymakers, because we can only have the right policy that suits the industry and the needs of the industry if they understand. That is what we will continue doing, engaging in different activities, awareness activities on television, on radios, on billboards, and all other means such as face-to-face. I think as we speak, we've got a documentary that is called Faces of Green Hydrogen that is running on our national broadcaster, giving the stories of Namibians that are working in this industry. People like somebody who has a sheep and goat header, they are part of their stories that are being told there to say, I used to be a sheep header. The specific farm point that is I am a Shigella. Eventually, he is currently a machine operator, from a sheep header to a machine operator because of this new industry. So these stories eventually will get the people to understand, to say it is not just a narrative or an abstract thing that we're talking about happening elsewhere, but it's something that is changing the lives of the people that we know, people that are in our community, people that speak our language, people that grow up in the same background as ourselves, and people that have went to the schools that we went ourselves.
Exactly. And then obviously this leads us into our next question, Jonah, in terms of if people that were asking about the employment rate of the sector, which has been, in most cases, some of the deep, sort of like the touchy subject matter regarding the entire green hydrogen sector. If we had to look at the employment rate of the sector itself, that's just for the green hydrogen sector, to what extent can green hydrogen projects accommodate Namibians through direct and indirect job creations? You highlighted just one now in terms of the goat herder that transitioned from being an agricultural worker in terms of participating in a manufacturing process. What other particular scopes and, you know, if we can call them case studies, also come to mind?
You see, one thing that we need to understand and also, I think, have the right context is that, yes, we have a very high unemployment rate in the country. And this unemployment problem will not be solved by one sector. It cannot be solved by agriculture alone. It cannot be solved by mining alone. It cannot be solved by fishing industry alone. And neither can it be solved by green hydrogen industry alone. And that now leads me to say, the new industry of green hydrogen production, or, you know, it's not a silver bullet to solve our problems when it comes to unemployment. It will obviously employ, it is employing currently, number of people, but it will not accumulate all of us that are unemployed. It will take up the number, to make a date, to make sure that at least it takes up, whether it is 10,000, whether it is 15,000, whether it is 20,000, it will obviously take up some of those people who are industry. But it is up to us as a country to make sure that all the other engines of the economy, they are operating very well so that they can be able to, you know, accumulate and suck up these people and moving people that are unemployed. So we should not depend on one industry. And I think that is very important when you look at the manifesto of the Living Group that we are in now, that may I want to diversify the economy in terms of different sectors, including green hydrogen, so that we are able to activate all the jobs that we can, you know, position Namibians that are unemployed.
Mm.
So it's the same with green hydrogen. We have to make sure that the opportunities that are coming are accessible by all Namibians. Those that qualify will definitely be employed, but it will not be able to employ all our unemployed people.
Mm.
So I'll give you a practical example. During the construction of Iron Oshiwela, they had about 400 people that were employed, but it was on contract because it was construction. Construction doesn't take all 5-7 years.
Mm.
It took less than a year to do that construction. 400 people were contracted. They were employed, but as we speak, on that specific plant, there is close to 50 people that are working there, permanently there.
Mm.
So that is a minus in the problem of pool of unemployed people that we have taken out. You look at Daura's green hydrogen. Currently, they've got 26 young people that are employed there, permanently. Those are saying that the number of people coming from the pool of unemployed.
Mm.
So shouldn't expect this industry to take up all the people that are unemployed. And it is very wrong for us to understand that you solve all the problems of unemployment, because there are other sectors that we must be able to face this unemployment problem. All of us, from agriculture, mining, fishing, in all other industries, or all other sectors, so that we can see how we can have a better country with people that are able to afford a better living standard.
Exactly. And Jonah, just finally, if we have to look forward, sort of like I'm asking you now to play a little bit of a weatherman in terms of giving us a forecast, what other projects are still in the pipeline and potentially what can Namibians still look forward to after this unveiling that took place this past weekend regarding in the sort of like in the broader green hydrogen industry, still for the rest of the timeline that is planned for this whole industry to be set up?
So I think we can quickly run through two or three of them, some of the projects that we're expecting them to. I think this year we may expect two green hydrogen projects to get online in terms of reaching their final investment decision.
Mm-hmm.
They are likely to be HDF Energy and possibly Clean Energy to also start with their phase two. Of our construction, and we also have got another project called the Vero. They should be, and I think they're starting with their construction effort, possibly towards the end of this year or earlier next year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we have got the big one, which is Hyphen, currently busy with their data collection or kind of feasibility study. Towards the end of next year, they should be done with that, and that feasibility study will be able to inform them whether they are able to proceed with investment and also deciding in the way forward in terms of construction of phase one and eventually start the production of 1 million metric tons of green ammonia.
Mm.
So I think that's really what it looks like. And we have obviously other smaller projects that we are not having in our documentation now, but the sector looks promising. But it's looking promising. We must understand that it will not be a silver bullet to all our products. It will obviously contribute here and there to the economy. I think if you look at Spain, it's a good example of Iron Oshiwela. During their first phase, they have spent close to $600 million.
Mm.
That's the money that came into the economy. So if you look into their phase two, already about more than 200 million has already been placed. To assist with them when we want to phase two. And that is the main money coming into this economy from the European Union. And it's not really coming from the proposal. That is money coming being farmed to our economy. And that is what we've been looking forward to and see how best we can have money built and capture part of that value in construction in different phases that should be captured by the media and eventually speaks to our needs of the country.
Exactly. Jonah, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners once again. Thank you once again for this insightful analysis based upon the development so far in the clean hydrogen sector of Namibia.
All right, there you had it, dear listeners. We can go into a very short commercial break, and then once we return, we can also give you more of the local news. Do not go away. We might stay tuned.
Pack your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Asherero Omainduriro, the Catholics Manita Karunga, the Afrikaans Sengfuar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Alright, the time is 54 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Of course, so we are moving on to the next item whereby FNB Namibia has partnered with the Ride Hailing Service, that's now LEFA, to promote safe transport choices while extending also added value to its insurance clients. Now, the partnership will see FNB insurance clients are receiving a free LEFA ride voucher every second month. Now, the initiative is aimed at preventing drinking and also driving while offering also convenience and safety. Now, FNB Insurance CEO said the partnership reflects the bank's commitment to going beyond traditional offering and, of course, giving back to its clients. Now, it's be a beautiful partnership with LEFA. It's one of my favorite rides. I use LEFA a lot, but really, for us, it's about extending value to our clients. That's what the CEO said. Now, he also added that the partnership aligns with FNB's access of fixed benefit and, of course, fixed access, and that the bank pays out up to $8 million annually in no claims bonuses. Now, we know Namibians love to have a bit of a social setting, but it does also come with consequences. That's what the CEO said. He also added that we do not want to see our clients being caught by the city police, and we also don't want to have those incidents the next morning where we must figure out, did you have one, two or three or more? That what the CEO also said there. Now, the vouchers, which will initially be available in Windhoek, will be sent via SMS to qualifying clients. And of course, he also encouraged clients from across the country to use them when they are in the capital. Although it is only in Windhoek, we extend the voucher to everyone in Namibia. So when you come to Windhoek, you can also drop your car off at the hotel or your family wherever you are staying. And of course, you can use the voucher and go out in Windhoek. That's what he also noted. Now, the new service is expected to be launched to F&B insurance clients via SMS line. Now, meanwhile, the LEFA founder and CEO, that is Michael Ausiku, has F&B insurance for placing its trust in local entrepreneurs. Now, speaking at the launch of the initiative, Ausiku said the partnership goes beyond business, stating that it is highlights the importance of investing in homegrown solutions and supporting the small and medium enterprises sector. Now, thank you very much to F&B Insurance for the opportunity. What I would like to highlight is your faith in a local company and local entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs, that what Ausiku said there, appreciate them. So he also urged other corporate companies to follow an FNB's lead by actively seeking out and supporting its local enterprises. Now, there are a lot of other SMEs and small companies doing great things. They need your support. They need you to give them a chance or two. That what he also added, how Sikwe explains optimism about the partnership and its potential to make a meaningful difference in the transport and safety space. That what Sikwe also just added. We can take a move to the next item whereby on the report on April 16, 2025, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Namibia held its second monthly meeting of the year to determine the appropriate monetary policy stance for the next 2 months. Now, to continue safeguarding the peg between the Namibian dollar and the U.S. South Africa's rent, while supporting also domestic economic admins, highlighted global policy uncertainty. The Monetary Policy Committee unanimously decided to keep the repo rate unchanged at 6.75%. Now, this decision was reached following a comprehensive review of current and expected domestic, regional, and global economic development. Now, domestic economic growth was experienced in 2024 and continues during the first 2 months of 2025. Despite a recent outpeak, domestic inflation appeared to be well contained. Growth in private sector credit extension remained subdued and broadly unchanged since the previous monetary policy meeting, committee meeting. Now, the trade deficit improved and the stock of international reserves remained insufficient. To maintain the current peg and, of course, meet the country's international financial obligations. Now, the real global gross domestic product, GDP, expanded at a solid pace of 3.7% in 2024, a bit slower than the 4.4% growth recorded in 2023. And this moderation was attributed to a contraction in the primary industry, particularly in the diamond mining sub-sector. Nonetheless, the domestic economy showed further expansion during the first 2 months of 2025 compared to the same period in 2024. Now, this positive performance was driven by sectors such as mining, tourism, wholesale, and of course, retail, trade, communication, transport, and construction. Now, to discuss this further, we will engage economists, engage economists for their insight. We might take a listen to this particular update.
All right, the Bank of Namibia has decided to maintain its repo rate at 6.75% for the next 2 months. That was announced yesterday by the Bank of Namibia. But then to unpack this for us, we're joined by Sakho Mountain, an economist. A very good morning to you, Sakho, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Ms. Lois. It's good to have you again. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Yeah, with the unchanged repo rate at 6.75, what do you perhaps maybe think about this decision and how beneficial it is for the domestic investors and, of course, consumers at large?
Yeah, it's a very good decision that the Bank of Namibia has decided to keep the repo rate at where it stands right now. So currently we speak that the repo rate is standing at 6.7%. which reflects a caution approach, more especially when you talk about the rising of inflation and global uncertainty. Now, this move that is taken by the Bank of Namibia, it's a four consecutive rate cut, which helps now in terms of shift in the monetary policy, as well as now the emerging economic challenges. To the decision that was taken to help the repo rate at 6.75%, it shows and it gives a green light not only to the Namibian at large, but to different investors, because the decision, if we are to look at it, is taken from a background where we could have looked at how it's going to be impactful in the long term as well as the short term, in terms of the economy as well as the growth of the GDP and employment-wise of the country at large.
Then again, when it comes to now the inflation, how does this maybe decision align with the current inflation rates?
If we have to look at inflation in terms of how this decision might impact or influence or affect,
we have to say now the inflation rate, it has risen to 4.2%, because in March it was at 3.6, I mean in February it was at 3.6. Now in March, the last inflation, as we read or have been informed or we looked at the statistics, it has been at 4.2%. Now the central bank has adjusted its inflation forecast upward, anticipating now the 4.2% for 2025. And 4.5%, which is approximately estimated for 2026. Now, primarily, this is mostly caused by now the currency depreciation and increase in administered prices. Now, this trend indicates growing inflation pressures, justifying the decision to pause rate cuts. Meaning to say now, because the decision has been made, and also we look at the inflation from February to March, it has shown that it has risen from 3.6 to 4.2%. So the decision of keeping the repo rate at 6.75, it shows, or it's a way also of trying to stabilize and keep the prices affordable for each and every individual. Because if we are to make the repo rate very high, then it will also cause, or it will also affect the inflation. Could be in a bad way or a good way. Because putting it very high, it's going to be beneficial only to the investors. However, now if we have to look at the money circulation within the country, it might not be affordable because central banks and other commercial banks might make it difficult for different traders and different consumers within the Indian industry to borrow and get money from banks. We're looking at the consumer. With the repo rate unchanged, the consumers can expect borrowing costs to remain stable at the moment, especially in the short term. This stability is done to encourage individuals to consider loans for significant purchases or investments, more especially now the consumers that are within the industry of investment. The repo rate being at 6.75 is very stable for someone or individuals to borrow and get money. However, it's essential now to remain cautious. Future rate adjustments could occur if inflation continues to rise. There could be some adjustment to be made if inflation continues going up, which then might also affect the borrowing as well as the investment. So then the borrowers should be very careful when they are borrowing, because they should consider all factors, because if the inflation rate continues going up, then a huge decision might be taken up, be it maybe to raise the repo rate or to reduce the repo rate, just in order to accommodate and reduce the inflation within the country at large.
And lastly, before I let you go, what is maybe your projection of repo rate for the upcoming months, given the current geopolitical tensions and, of course, trade war?
We expect the repo rate to remain the same. If they have to change it, maybe I would suggest that it will go down. It will reduce maybe with plus minus 30% or just a small margin. Because now the central bank decision also considers global economic uncertainty. In this way, we are talking about including escalating trade tensions and potential recessions. Now, some of these factors contribute to market volatility and can impact Namibia's economic outlook. While the repo rate is currently stable, future adjustments will depend now on how these global issues evolve and affect domestic inflation and economic growth. Now, in summary, the Bank of Namibia's decision to maintain the repo rate at 6.75% aims to navigate rising inflation and global economic uncertainty, providing a stable environment for investors, be it outside or inside the country, and consumers while remaining vigilant for future economic development. It's very interesting and it's very something concerning for us, especially the youth, as well as different economics in different industries, to keep ourselves up to date with the repo rate and what is happening within the economy at large. Because the repo rate affects not only the banks, but it affects everyone. Meaning to say, we need to know where do we stand as a country and where do we stand in terms of the economy at large. We need to take strategic decisions, more especially to the people that are involved in the business market, not only the business market, but individuals also. And also the decision of the money circulation in the country. We should stay up to date with regards to everything, which will help us now make wise decisions, be it in the current situation or the future at large.
All right. Thank you so much, Sanku, for having you.
You're welcome. Nice. It's a pleasure to always have you.
All right. And on that note, we also spoke with another economist, Peter Franz, to just gather his thought or insights on the repo rate. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Yes, so this decision was well taken. Mm-hmm. I think we should also just give gratitude or to give credit to the policymakers.
Mm-hmm.
And how this percentage is benefiting the local investors. So mm-hmm. basically what happened is, so it's unfortunately that it's a bad idea for, it's a bad decision for the investors, because an investor is someone that wants more retained on their investments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now their retained remains the same, unfortunately mm-hmm. not going to change, so could be the threat for them, but I think it's still a good decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this percentage was no way going to go down. The repo wasn't going to go down. It either remains the same or going up. We see how the economic activities are happening globally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
mm-hmm.
So basically, well, this is a good thing for even the local consumers, because the product means the prices are not going to be high.
Mm. And again, looking at the inflation, how does this decision align with the current inflation trends?
Yeah, so it's earlier last month, I think, the fuel price has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the measures that was used to control the inflation. So in this case, they couldn't increase the repo rate, because in that case, inflation was already handled by the price of petrol. So remember, price of fuel is one of the main factors that determines that contribute to inflation. Yes.
How will maybe the consumer experience this decision, and does this also mean that borrowing costs have stabilized for now? Should consumer perhaps consider this as a good time to take loans, or what do you think, your side?
So for me, I feel like consumers should also take this into consideration, just to think of now. Mm-hmm. Imagine given all the activities that are happening mm-hmm. in the world,
mm-hmm.
I think it's just a good time to pay off what they are owing mm-hmm. right now, and see perhaps what will happen next month. In the next 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So after this next 2 months, I think then it's the time where they have to decide now if they should borrow or not, because of the interest rate.
All right. And again, on the next 2 months, what are your maybe projections on the repo rate for upcoming month time?
In the upcoming 2 months, after the 2 months, I feel like the repo rate might increase, actually,
okay.
because this is now given the fact that some of the all of the product may not be available as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depending on how this trade war is going to affect all the nations.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, prices might even be higher than what we have today.
All right. Perhaps just elaborate more there. When you say prices might be higher, what do you mean for the consumers? Like, I mean, what factors maybe that attribute to higher prices?
So let's start with inflation. So basically, we can expect inflation to increase at least by 1% or just a few.
Yeah.
So because let's say the war that is between China and the trade war between China and the U.S.
Mm.
If China takes some of the raw materials to produce certain products that Namibia consumes from China, so these products are going to be expensive, because China's way to get these raw materials is all going to be very high, like it's going to be costly.
Mm.
So in that case, our products that we're going to get from China, which is nearly 30%, so that's going to cause a price increase in this kind of product.
Mm.
And then that will also result in inflation.
Mm.
Yeah, so for the government to control this rate of inflation, they use the repo rate as one of the contributing factors.
Oh, okay.
So that's to bring us Namibia to the policymakers for making such a good decision.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much, Peter, for having me.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Alright, the time is 12 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop with me, Lois Ashimi. I hope you to take a little small break, and then of course after that we'll take a listen to the other news. Do not go away.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Same. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Right, the time is 14 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and to move on, my colleague Zafia Basson spoke with Solomon Opinge, a financial advisor who shared tips for spending wisely this Easter weekend. You might take a listen to the discussion.
Good morning, Mr. Solomon.
Good morning. Good morning, Bernadette.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for having me on your program, Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you for joining us. As we approach Easter weekend, many people tend to overspend and end up borrowing money for vacations and other expenses. What useful tips do you have for us this Easter weekend?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I think really all the things, and I commend you that really are on the go and ready all the time to produce topics that are relevant in season for which they are needed. And I think it's quite important that as a people we advise one another so we are able to navigate this event or this season open-mindedly. Easter weekend is, as we have been observing over the time, we will realize that it is capitalized by business owners, in that they hike up their sales during this period of time, and this can happen in many different ways, either through their marketing strategies, which is quite enticing for people to end up making poor financial decisions, and those are the things that we have to be aware of. As consumer, that we do not get carried away in overspending, and most importantly, my very core advice here is, for the consumers to, be aware and not, under no circumstance, engage themselves with a credit transaction or taking out a loan or a debt for the purpose of Easter expenses or traveling expenses because other people are doing it or your friends and friends' families are doing it. You never know. Maybe they might have budgeted for such a trip and you are now acting impulsively by taking the risk of putting yourself into a loan agreement and so forth.
yeah, those are my views.
What measures do we need to consider instead of risking overspending?
I think quite importantly, and sometimes for those who are prepared and they already have these systems in action, good for them. But for those that were unfortunate and you were not well prepared over this Easter, I would encourage you to tighten up your belt. It's not going to cause you any harm at all. Go through this Easter with minimal that you can go through with, and already get prepared so that we are able to prepare for the next Easter season. I believe that as individuals and families, we've got unique, different needs as far as our time is concerned, where you need to travel somewhere for a certain purpose, or you would rather use your Easter to go to the Ohambo or the farm just to go do some work. Let us prepare by putting something aside, by saving for the purpose of whatever your plan over the year is. And not only to save for Easter, but we talk about to save for big events like your Christmas season, your back to school season, your Easter season, and so on, et cetera. So that when you come in, you are prepared financially and you have the means to do what you want to do, and you live within the means. Also, let us be aware of impulsive spending. Impulsive spending, you go into a store for a specific purpose, you only went to go get milk and bread, and then you find something that is displayed here is a chocolate, and you grab all of these unnecessary items that you do not intend, that was not your intention to take you to the supermarket. Those are the things that we need to be aware. Again, stay away from debt. This marketing campaign that the business owners uses, you know, sometimes they can give you an example of, I'm going to give you an example of a furniture account which promises to give you a bed with a holiday payment of 3 months. But you have not considered that repayment commitment, is it sufficient within your budget, or is it going to strain you? And you must remember that debt problem can really lead to extreme anxiety, stress, and it overall just affects all areas of our lives, our families, our work colleagues. We must be aware of this thing so that we prevent ourselves from such disasters.
Are there any smart saving strategies people can adapt throughout the year to better prepare for such holidays?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there is quite a lot of saving mechanism. I mean, we live in the 21st century. The information is at the tip of a finger. If you go on Google, they will give you quite a wide range of different strategies and examples that one can apply. And I cannot list them here because of time, but there are thousands and thousands of ways that, you know, each and every one of us can adapt to, because we all have a unique financial circumstance or situation.
Mm-hmm. But perhaps you can give us three strategies that we can maybe adapt to.
Okay. Very importantly, I would recommend setting up what we call an emergency savings, or I would rather call it an emergency investment.
Mm-hmm.
It is very important that you do a thorough background homework to see where you can put your emergency investment, where it works for your money, where as you are saving, your money still continues to grow. And that is just basically your emergency savings that you are able to go to at any given time should emergency arose, or activities like, you know, you want to go for a holiday, you know. And as you structure your contribution towards this investment, you know that you are contributing a portion for emergency specifically. And then if you are planning to take a trip or a holiday, then you still use the same investment vehicle, because the more you capitalize onto that investment, the more interest you earn, or the more interest the money yields for growth purposes. That is one that I can give that I feel like really is very effective, and you benefit on both sides rather than having a 30-day savings which sits there and the money does not go anywhere. And if it does, it's by little amount.
Thank you so much. That was Solomon Ipinga, a seasoned financial advisor that shares some practical advice on how to manage your finances this Easter.
Right, there you have it. On our next item, where your connections are crucial for development in many advanced countries. Now, Namibia invested in railway connectivity during the administration of Dr. Sam Nujoma. Now, however, the current state of trust Namib and train transportation seems to have limited utility for individuals and, of course, small businesses. Now, to discuss this, we spoke to Trust Namib spokesperson Kandel Swartz about the plan for the railway industry and the current status of the Namibian railway system. We might take a listen to what he has to say.
The Namibian railway infrastructure is under severe pressure. However, in recent years, government, through the Ministry of Works and Transport, has upgraded the railway between Walvis Bay and Kransberg. This is a key strategic line that leads into the port. Other key projects that are ongoing, supported through the Ministry of Works and Transport, includes the upgrading of the line from Kransberg to Otjiwarongo. This is underway. Then the next phase will also be from Otjiwarongo to Chumip. There's also a project currently underway in Sanfrar Buchosbron area, which is on the southern line between Arlemsvlei and Lüderitz. These projects help the railway infrastructure improve and aligns to Namibia's vision of economic growth and positioning itself as a logistics hub, as railway will be a key enabler to achieve these goals. Due to the implementation of its integrated strategic business plan, Transnamib is focusing on its core business, which is the movement of bulk freight, to grow its revenue. Once this is achieved and the company becomes profitable and sustainable, the company will shift and look at the opportunities to incorporate passenger services again. Key to Namibia's turnaround strategy was the ability to secure a $2.6 billion loan that was successfully done last year. This has now enabled Transnamib to acquire additional capacity in terms of rolling stock. This would include locomotives and wagons. Once this is in place, Transnamib will be able to create and generate more revenue. And with this being achieved, Transnamib will look at reintroducing passenger services and would like the Namibian people at large to be able to make use of rail transportation in the future.
Right, on our next item, which should be our last update of the day, is that the United Nations resident coordinator, Hopolang Fororo, accompanied by key UN collaboration partners, conducted a field visit yesterday to access ongoing initiative in the Kavango West region. Now, the delegation began the day visiting Mopini and Tesava villages, where they observed the rehabilitation of water infrastructure. The visit included engagements with village leadership and a close observations of outreach services, interaction with beneficiaries, and of course conducting interviews to gain a first-hand insight into the impact of the project. We might take a listen to what my colleague, or rather on this, my colleague Anakleba Haikera brings us this particular report.
For the 2 days visit, had they two been in the Kamango West region?
So the visits were just like almost, I would say, monitoring visits, just really to come and look and see what was the results or the outcomes of the initiatives that the UN has been working here in Kamango, Kamango West. And we were here last week, this guy came here in December last year, and then we had just received funds, so in some instances receiving funds was really just to see how we could also work in an integration.
Right, I apologize for this particular update. Of course, we'll have to get this update from Anakleba herself, because I think the background is not that proper, and I apologize for that. That should be our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in to the LA Morning Scoop. And before I let you, or I gave the mic, I mean the mic to that mic, would love again to repeat this and remind you to follow our social media pages, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as a Facebook page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course the Eagle FM Namibia. Will also find us on the on LinkedIn. Please do not forget to just follow and visit our platforms, and please do not forget to download our app, Eagle FM app. You will find on your Google Play Store and of course App Store, and you can able to tune in everywhere you go. And thank you so much. And for me, Lisa Shim, it's a very good day from me, and I would like to give this platform or the mic to Daddy Mike Oshaveli.